Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Welcome back to Grassroots Marketing here on CannabisRadio.com. In a moment, we're going to be joined by a Peabody Award-winning documentarian who is working around the shaping the public narrative around cannabis and psychedelics. Jeffrey Miller, CEO of Honey Project. We're going to talk with him in just a moment. But first, I'm not even going to burden you that much of a commercial today. TheBuzzCRM.com is, of course, our great sponsor at Grassroots Marketing. You want to close leads? You want something that will take care of your email, social media, chat, support, all that? TheBuzzCRM.com. Just take that right there. As many people in your employee that you need to go and put together on a project, website building, social planning, marketing, automation, it's all done for you. A low barrier to entry. That's all I got to tell you. We're not going to go along on the commercial. TheBuzzCRM.com today, it's TheBuzzCRM.com. Go find out more right now. So again, I'm here with the CEO of Honey Projects, Jeffrey Miller. And Jeffrey, thanks for being on with me. Given your background as a Peabody Award-winning documentarian, tell me about leveraging your storytelling expertise to market Honey Projects, which for those who might not be familiar, it's based in New Jersey. It's a visionary force reshaping New Jersey's cannabis market with bold leadership and expertise. And there are various things you have within this. You have, first of all, an expanding portfolio, including Honey Stash, setting the product lines, setting the industry standards. You have Honey Projects, which unites cultivators, strategists, and proven leaders to drive ventures from premier dispensaries to innovative products that thrive across. And you help to build brands that inspire enduring loyalty fueled by leadership that redefines what cannabis can achieve. Jeffrey, when you are looking to go and shape the public narrative around cannabis and psychedelics, with all the stigmas and misinformation we get thrown out there by many other places, tell me about the narrative shifts you're trying to aim to achieve and how you measure the impact of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Jorge. It's a pleasure. And I love starting in this place because the connection between my documentary life, which was like 15 years of experience, and my cannabis life, which is, you know, coming up on 10 years, it really is connected. And the first project that I worked on as a documentary film person, I was really young, and we made a movie about corn farming in America and what the impacts were on the way that our food subsidy programs are set up and how it results in the food system that we have and all the unusual sort of unnecessary problems that we have in there. And our main expert in that movie, which was called King Corn, was Michael Pollan, who now more recently has become a big psychedelic author. So, you know, the thing's really, it's wild how the coincidence has cropped up over the years, even with people that didn't seem to have anything to do with it at the beginning. But, you know, that movie was really about trying to understand how agriculture and farming work in our country. And cannabis is the day. It is an agricultural business, really. And everything we do relies on the way that people take care of these plants. And so seeing how factory farming and industrial farming evolved in this country in the 60s and 70s, and the impact of those policies and what they resulted in terms of the quality of our food and the problems that we have with it. And it's really a very straightforward, direct relationship. And you can see that if we don't sort of take care of our relationship with cannabis and the cannabis plant and treat it a little differently than we treat commodity crops like corn and soybeans, we're going to end up with the same outcome because we're doing the same thing. So, you know, there's this really cool straight line from that first project until now. And then that's the movie that won a Peabody Award. And then between that movie and entering the cannabis business, I worked on a lot of different things about some music documentaries, some TV shows, like a bunch of different stuff. And eventually was doing some cannabis projects about, especially about smugglers and high stick in the 70s and the people who were bringing it over and sending it, shipping it in creative ways. And it was through the research that I was doing on that project and getting to know the people that I was interviewing that I ended up deciding to enter the cannabis business myself.
And now you were interested in the cannabis business itself, and just made mention about honey projects and the various things that you have. You have Honey Grove, the 2024 Dispensary of the Year by Cannadamics. You have Honey Projects, which is helping to reshape the market. And you have Honey Stash and the various product lines you helped go and work out with a lot of craft cultivators, craft cannabis cultivators out there. So
that's right.
Prioritizing small batch independent brands and fostering a community connection and a corporate dominant industry. Going up against the MSOs, you're trying to help the small guys out. Let me try the specific criteria and vetting process that Honey Project you pick the right cultivators to work with and how you ensure a commitment to craft cannabis that can be economically sustainable and scalable as New Jersey's markets.
Absolutely. You know, when we started running Honey Grove, and when I say we, I mean me and the partner that I work most closely with, his name is Big Dave, and he's a legacy cannabis person. He grew for decades, and then he was up in Maine doing their caregiver program for many years. But he's from Bloomfield, New Jersey, so he came home, and we sort of started running this one single store about 2 years ago. And when we started doing that, you know, there was no cannabis that wasn't MSO, except for, you know, maybe two cultivators that weren't part of a big publicly traded organization. And so we sort of had an interesting experience of being like, oh, geez, like, how are we going to do this? You know, like, what are we going to, we got our muscles warmed up for trying to assess what we were going to put on our shelves, really based on what we could assess quality-wise, because we couldn't assess anything based on values, because the values were really all kind of the same. And then gradually over the last, you know, 18, 20 months, a lot more independent and craft cultivators have come online, which for us has been like a real breath of fresh air. But also it's like you're saying, it's allowed us to form these partnerships that are deeper and that really embody what we care most about. And so for us, we usually start, we talk to people, obviously we try to get a sense of what they're all about. That is important, to be honest. Like we really want to work with people who are aligned in a bigger sense with a vision of a cannabis industry that can do more than just sell the most pounds at the cheapest price. You know, we want partners that are partners across the board and that will help contribute to that mission of having a more you know, self-aware and conscious industry. Not that there isn't a place for that more commoditized version, but we think that there's plenty of room for what we see as a better future as well. So we talk to people, we get a sense of what they're trying to do, and then we always go and visit the grow and look at what they're doing. And Dave, you know, has been a cultivator for 29 years, and he's seen it all. And so we go together often, and or sometimes he goes without me. You know, sometimes I have to pay the bills. And basically, we take a look at how they're doing it and what they're doing, and we try to see if it walks the walk. You know, and so we don't have the biggest menu. We try to have the best menu. We try to have what we would stand by at each price point. It's not to say that we don't have things that are less expensive or more expensive, but we take the position that if we're going to sell it, it has to be something we would recommend to, you know, my mom or my friend or my cousin, you know, as this is a great value and it's a solid product, or it really is something outstanding that we really think is special and worth stocking.
Now, one of the areas you also are advocating for is
one other thing I was going to say, a lot of these smaller brands, they don't have a big marketing budget, you know, and they're often really good at growing weed, but they may not have ever even tried to tell their own story before. You know, they're often not social media experts, or they're not film and video or photography experts or graphic design experts. You know, that's not their strong suit. Their strong suit is in the garden growing plants. And so because of my background and Dave's, you know, personal abilities and talents creatively, and the rest of our team on the creative and marketing side, which is really full of artistically minded people. We've got somebody who's an animator and somebody who has produced a bunch of, you know, platinum. He's done the producing of a couple of hip hop tracks that have gone platinum and things like real creative people. One of the things that we try to do when we work with these smaller brands is we try to help them tell their story in a way that maybe they couldn't do on their own. And so we feel like that's kind of our responsibility as a store that's going to be partners with these groups. We want to share with them what we are good at so that we can benefit from what they're good at, and everybody gets the benefit of a symbiotic relationship.
Well, it's indicative about your passion for what you've been doing here, coming out of, you know, the documentary work, and now what you've also done with your own personal journey with cannabis when it comes to in the mental health space, when it comes to managing clinical depression and anxiety. Also, you have been certified in psychedelic therapy, so you have a very unique perspective of what you do. Tell me about what Honey Projects does to bridge the gap between adult use cannabis and the field of psychedelic assisted wellness and how they can work.
You know, that is our big sort of shining star that we're aimed at. And to your, you know, earlier question, like, how do you do it? How do you tell this story in a way that's compelling to people? And, you know, whether it's just about cannabis and supporting smaller operators who are more, you know, craft oriented and pay more attention to the plant, all the way through the sort of health and wellness and mental health on picture, all the way into psychedelics. Like, the truth is that it seems, not surprisingly, that what works is really to try to meet people where they are and to try to go step by step. Like, if we were to suddenly start hosting, you know, large group facilitated, quasi-legal mushroom ceremonies, I don't know that that would be something that would really connect with people, maybe too much too fast. So we're sort of starting by trying to broaden people's ideas of what's possible with cannabis. You know, there are practitioners that do ceremonial or conscious cannabis ritual or meditation and yoga, and try to use cannabis for a personal development or spiritual development. Those things can actually be quite surprisingly powerful for people, especially for people who already feel like they have a pretty solid relationship with cannabis. It can be really surprising to discover that, like, oh, you could use this in this totally other way that isn't what I normally do. And just speaking personally, which is often another good way to try to help bring people into having this broader perspective of what's possible. Like, the truth is, for me, dealing with depression and anxiety, I have found that it's not exactly the cannabis itself that's the helpful thing. It's using the cannabis as a tool and doing other things that are also supportive of better mental health. Like, in my case, I have found that using cannabis and thinking or meditating or journaling, it really helps me get some distance from my thoughts. And that gives me enough space that I can see what I'm doing to myself. I can see the thought patterns that I'm engaging in, and then I'm standing in a firmer place, and I can stop. And really, at the end of the day, like, having the self-empowerment to be able to think differently, it is the way that you can get yourself out of those kinds of loops. So cannabis for me has been a real ally in that work. And I think for it really responds to what you bring to it, right? If you bring something positive and set and setting, you know, you really set that up and you treat the cannabis respectfully and you treat your experience like something that's really intentional, that you want to have something come out of it, it will give that to you. And then, of course, if you want to smoke weed and watch a movie and hang out with your friends or go to Top Golf or whatever, like, that's also great. It can be a great time. So it's not to say that one thing is better than another, but I do think that this sort of mental health aspect that leads towards psychedelic therapies and those kinds of modalities, I think we could put a lot more energy and attention into that, because there's so many people that are suffering and who I think could benefit from it.
Now, you also speak about reclaiming the cannabis industry's soul and balancing profit with purpose, as part of our leaders by Ben Cohen. And in a post-Green Rush landscape, what concrete, conscious leadership practices, tell me about those that Honey Projects has done to implement, to cultivate a culture of care for employees over profits. So again, challenges you've faced in maintaining values amidst the rapid growth and market pressures. I mean, because I'm always, you know, happy about compliance and various issues about, you know, safe cultivation and production. you know, to go along above and beyond what standards are put out there by whatever state. But there's a different area for yourself about consciously. Think more about that. And, you know, that's a, another area. I mean, when people might talk about social equity or might talk about just compliance or other areas about what people should be caring about, why is conscious leadership so important?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, there's been some real pretty good research about this kind of approach to leadership. And it's pretty clear that there's a lot of very measurable benefits from a purely business standpoint, which I could talk about in a second. But also, like, there's the benefit of just feeling good about what you're doing at work, which for me, the most rewarding thing is always to in the people, whether the people are the employees or the customers. You know, that's where you feel like you're connecting with people. And that's what gives you the sense of accomplishment or of value, aside from, you know, making a living and having the business survive and grow and be successful, which is a requirement. You know, it's not, I think the number one thing about it is to start to dissolve the illusion that having a positive and conscious work environment or workplace is in some way like at odds with having a profitable business. And it just, they're not, and that they are mutually reinforcing. You can't have a good culture if your business is failing. And it would appear that having a good culture really helps you have a better business. So for us, we really do prioritize our employees, and we make a lot of effort to try to work with them, especially if we find somebody, we bring somebody in and it seems like maybe the role is not a perfect fit. We make a lot of effort to try to find something that is. We try to create a really positive and supportive environment that starts with a growth mindset, right? Where we're challenges or mistakes or whatever that come up are opportunities for improvement. Now, you know, if you make the same mistake 15 times, like that's not so good. We got to figure out something to do about that. But making mistakes is the process of learning. And so we take that approach, and we encourage all of our employees to do that and to allow themselves to feel good about the process of learning along the way. And, you know, there's an organization called the Conscious Leadership Group, and they have a website and some media, and they also have a book or two. And they're sort of a good model for us. But there's a bunch of other groups doing similar kinds of work where you really are making an effort to create an environment that's good for the person. It's good for the people that are running the business. And that produces better ideas, more engagement, more valuable contributions from the employees, less turnover, more ease of communication and ease of working together collaboratively. And especially as AI is coming into the picture, it feels like having people do the best at what people do, but that AI can't do, like have an engagement with one another and have symbiotic kind of energy and create new ideas together, be unique and have it take initiative and have new concepts and projects. I think it will stand us and it put us in a good place going forward. And we've seen the results. Our employees, we have very little turnover, very, very little turnover, especially in an industry where it seems like, that's the very common problem. So, so far, so good. And I think that, you know, just to give you a really concrete example, like we start a lot of our meetings, we do, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of breathing exercises just so that the stress of the day and the difficulties of what's coming up, you know, we can just kind of try to set that aside and be present to collaborate with each other on how we're going to solve them rather than still operating from the, you know, the waves that are crashing against the shore every 5 or 10 minutes.
Final question, Jeffrey, is as being an advocate for both cannabis and psychedelics, we know there's directions that are now going on with cannabis where we're waiting to see if rescheduling is going to go through. We know that the DEA chairman has already been confirmed. Mm-hmm. Put a priority about making sure to see what happens with rescheduling, but not hasn't have a position on it. With psychedelics, we know there have been a couple of states that have started to open up more about various, you know, mushrooms or psilocybin and various other treatments that are available out there. We've been seeing those changes now come to fruition. But when you look down the line, you know, what do you think will pass the finish line with cannabis and psychedelics, and which one will be integrated into mainstream society? And where does Honey Project see itself in 5 to 10 years based on that assessment?
Cool. Yeah, great question. I think that based on what we see right now, it looks to me like a sort of medical model of psychedelics is the most likely thing in the shortest run, right? Like, I think everybody was really excited a couple of years ago in 2023 when MDMA was up for FDA approval for treatment of PTSD, and the MAPS, had their for-profit company that was trying, or their public benefit company, sorry, that was trying to get that passed, and everyone was so optimistic, and then it didn't happen. You know, I think that was a unfortunate but necessary speed bump, but I think the path is still in that direction. Like, there's a lot of other clinical trials that are going on. There's a lot of advanced candidates that are ahead for, especially for treatment of some specific conditions. And to the extent, and this is not my personal opinion, it's not my preference, but to the extent that those trials can minimize the impact of the therapy itself, because that's so difficult to standardize, and can demonstrate, you know, efficacy just of the drug itself, those things will be more likely to get approval and to be disseminated through, you know, the medical system. So I think, and I think that really is going to come. I don't know that it's going to come in a way that we all love, but at least not in the short run. But I think there will be some form of psychedelic therapies that will be approved, especially with RFK Jr. and his seemingly passionate support of psychedelics. So I think there's a medical side that's coming. Like, as far as Honey Projects and what we're doing is concerned, like, we're in a wait and see pattern. Our dream would definitely be to be having healing centers and to be involved in a deep way, an active way in trying to facilitate, mainstream therapeutic benefit from these things that we really believe in and have been helped by. So, exactly how that happens, is it, are we operating clinical facilities? Well, we're not doctors, maybe we have a partnership, but there's also, other ways that might come through. And that would be more exciting for us, because we're not medical professionals. We're more on the, social use and what has been a more underground culture of how to use psychedelics for personal development. And whether it's through a partnership with medical practitioners or through some other means, like you see in Oregon or in Colorado, we would be very, very passionate about getting involved in doing that. And I think that cannabis has the benefit of being state legal and can be really effective and useful in similar ways. And so we can get started on sort of building that structure sooner and not wait for that, and we can try to start figuring out how to bring that to people and have them learn from it. And we've started. It's first things first is to have the business stand on its own feet. And so, we started with Honey Grove down south, and we got it up to a good place, and then we opened the second location, Honey Stash, up in Metuchen, New Jersey. The first one's down in Clementon, near outside Philly. And, the second one has a drive-through, and it's in a different kind of a community, and we're reaching across, different groups of people. And that's the best thing about cannabis, is that it appeals to so many different kinds of people. So I think that using that as a way to bring people into this new mindset, like I was talking about before, and building an infrastructure for facilitating that kind of experience, I think that is what we see our role as being, and advocating for it publicly and in a legal sense too.
So three websites I want to make sure you take a look at as we go and close things out. Honey-projects.com. Honey-projects.com. For the dispensary in Metuchen, New Jersey, as Jeffrey just elaborated, that's honeygrovedispensary.com. And if you'll learn more also about Honey Stash Dispensary, that's honeystash.com. Check those three places out. But it's all connected to honey-projects.com. Go ahead and look at that and make sure to go and go check out the folks there in Metuchen, New Jersey, 700 Middlesex Avenue. Make sure to go check them out. It's right next to the new Starbucks across the street from the Middlesex. There we go.
Right,
also, within walking distance of New Jersey Transit and the train station there. Make sure to go ahead and check out the place. What a great looking building. All that you have over there. It's a lot of passion behind what you have here. Really like talking with you, Jeffrey. Thanks for making time for us once again on Grassroots Marketing. Jeffrey Miller, CEO of Honey Projects.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.